Mike Pence breaks another tie. Congress clears a path for tax reform. That, plus Curtis Hill takes his message to a national audience, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending October 27th, 2017.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, Vice President Mike Pence cast the tie-breaking vote in the Senate to roll back a rule that banned forced arbitration. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau had created a rule banning the use by banks and credit card companies of what's called forced arbitration, language that bars customers from suing the institutions and instead forcing them into mediation. Republican backers of the measure to repeal that rule argue arbitration delivers more money faster to consumers without diverting that money to lawyers. But opponents of the congressional action say it restricts the rights of consumers to go after bad actors in the banking and credit industry. After two GOP senators broke ranks to vote against the move, Vice President Pence broke the tie. Is repealing this rule a bad look for Republicans? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Jennifer Hollowell, John Schwanes, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Katzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting State House reporter Brandon Smith. Ann Delaney, the banking industry supported repeal of this rule, but Republicans argue it's also about helping consumers. Can both be true?
No, they cannot. I mean, it was clearly done by the banking industry and the credit card industry to discourage litigation. When you have a small claim, it is not economically feasible to pursue that through arbitration or any other way. The only way you get the banks and the credit card companies to stop the abuses is by class actions, which this will ban, because they're forced to go to arbitration. And like, for example, with Wells Fargo, we just saw, where they created, because of their internal incentives to have new accounts, they created fictitious accounts. And in the course of doing that, ruined credit for a number of people. Those are not feasible to take to arbitration. They're only to be dealt with in class actions. So this bill is designed, again, by the Republican Party to protect banks and to protect credit cards at the expense of consumers. And that's the only way to interpret it.
Donald Trump ran on a message in large part of, you know, I'm the only one who can stand up to Wall Street because I'm not, and big banks and the like, because I'm not beholden to them. Will the people who support Donald Trump buy the argument that this bill is about them?
Well, I think that this is a lot more complicated issue than it appears on the surface, and certainly more so than what Ann is talking. It's the bumper sticker is easy, but if you really kind of dig into it, it is really complicated. I mean, I think we have to find some sort of balance between frivolous lawsuits and things that could put, you know, community banks and others completely out of business, and an ability for people who need to have some sort of reconciliation and repair. So I think it is a lot more complicated than what we can go into, but I want to at least point out about the tie-breaking votes. You know, so the vice president, now this is his fifth tie-breaking
already,
vote.
Yeah.
And our first vice president, John Adams, I recently watched that series, cast 12 in 3 months. Now, Pence is not to the point of George Herbert Walker Bush or Dick Cheney, though I think he'll get there, and especially with this Senate, until we get another Republican from Indiana in the U.S. Senate, he's going to have to cast more votes.
Or until you lose some more Republicans, which may happen the next election.
Jennifer talked about the bumper sticker here is easy. Is that a problem, though, that the bumper sticker argument against what the Republicans did here, is that a problem for Republicans?
It potentially could be, because it wasn't difficult, say, for consumer groups or for veterans groups to figure out where to come down on this issue. They were overwhelmingly supportive of the ban on forced arbitration.
Right.
So in many sectors, it is a complicated issue. And any time you get into financial regulation in the banking industry, it is by definition complicated. But the goal in and of itself was pretty clear and pretty fundamental. But in a way, you could see the handwriting on the wall here, because this came out, of course, of the Consumer Finance Protection Bureau, headed by Richard Cordray. And that's been a favorite target of Republicans for years. You know, this was created in a somewhat unusual manner. It didn't. It came out of the executive branch largely instead of the path that many agencies come in terms of their creation. So there are those, of course, on the Republican side of the aisle who still view this as somehow illegitimate, not the rule itself, but even the rule maker, the agency.
Right.
So
if you look at the dueling op-eds that maybe John is going to speak to, but sorry.
No, that's fine.
Well, John, I want to ask you this. There was a lot of furor when this action was taken this week, and it's already died down in a lot of ways. Is this one that's just sort of a blip on the monitor?
This is one that's got potential to be some lasting damage, if you will, from a political perspective. The immediate furor has died down, but what happens when you have another Wells Fargo? What happens when you have another Equifax breach? And it comes out that there's nothing you can do about it, or you have to take it to arbitration where your results may be capped and where it's difficult to keep track of the case, those kinds of things. So it's a potential mine, I guess you might say, politically for the Republicans going forward, because while I agree with Jennifer that it's not a simple issue, the headline counts here, and the headline is that this is deregulating banks, and this comes after the fall in 2008 when the financial crisis nearly crashed the entire economy. And so I think that you connect those two and you still have some skepticism at the very
least.
These
are contracts of adhesion. I mean, you can't negotiate a contract with a bank or a credit card company.
Right.
So you're forced to do that. And to your point, whether it's simple or it isn't simple, if the attack takes 30 seconds and the explanation and defense takes 3 minutes, you've lost the argument.
Well, time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question is eliminating the forced arbitration ban about helping consumers or helping big banks and credit card companies. A, consumers. B, big banks and credit card companies. C, both. Or D, neither. Last week's question, is Greg Pence the favorite to win as he enters the 6th District U.S. House race? 28% say yes, 72% say no. I'm a little surprised at that one. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, the U.S. House this week passed a Senate-approved budget resolution that clears a path for tax reform. The House narrowly approved the budget plan, 216-212, while the Senate only managed to pass it 51-49. The measure sets up a tax reform bill whose details still have not been fully released. The original House budget resolution called for the tax cuts to be offset by spending cuts or closed tax loopholes, but the Senate resolution does not contain that mandate, potentially opening the door for a tax reform plan that could add as much as $1.5 trillion to the debt. The budget resolution also allows the Senate to approve that tax bill with a simple majority rather than a filibuster-proof 60 votes necessary for many other measures. Jennifer Hollowell, quite frankly, are Hoosier Republicans who voted for this budget resolution betraying a promise that they've run on now, in some cases, for a lot of cycles, to reduce the national debt?
No, absolutely not. This is what is necessary to get to tax reform. Look, the U.S. House, their budget passed, required $5.1 trillion in spending reductions over the next decade. The Senate passed version did not. The only way to get us to a point to tax reform, which is a promise that we have made to the American people, is to pass this. And so that is what we're setting up. And frankly, getting tax reform done, which I'm optimistic we will do in the next few months, is the first step in righting the ship on this fiscal policy. And so here again, though, I'll add that we need another Republican in the U.S. Senate, and then we can have a bigger step towards spending reductions.
Yeah. We don't have this obviously explodes the budget and explodes the deficit. And that, you know, they only talk about the deficit and debt reduction when there's a Democrat in the White House. When there's a Republican in the White House, they're going to grow our way out of it. They've tried to grow our way out of it repeatedly in our history. What's the definition of insanity? Doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result? This is going to explode the deficit. It isn't tax reform at all. What it's going to do is transfer money from the poor to the rich. That's what it's going to do. You're going to give crumbs to the middle class, and you're going to give huge tax breaks to the wealthy. That's what this is all about. I mean, Donald Trump alone with only, of course, we don't know his taxes since he hasn't bothered to release them even after the fact that he's president, but the last year they were public, The repeal of the alternative minimum tax alone would have saved him $31 million. Now he's telling us that whatever this tax proposal he has isn't going to benefit him financially. I don't believe him, okay? And if it's true, he should release his tax returns and show us. This is designed to transfer wealth and to make the inequality in our country greater. That's what it's designed to do. And they're rushing it through without any thought as to what's happening to people's 401ks or their deduction. If, for example, for state taxes, 25% of Hoosiers take the deductions for state taxes that they're talking about eliminating, which would be a $6,000 to $8,000 tax increase for those people.
And to be fair, Gary Cohn has talked about how that is a problem they already see in the tax reform plan, and it's something they look forward to solving as this process moves
and
forward.
And when are they going to tell us how they're going to solve it before they ask for a vote on it?
Well, Jennifer brings up the fact that this isn't the vote on tax reform. This is simply clearing the path for that, and it's the way to advance to that discussion. In that sense, does it really not matter as much that these Republicans took this vote this time?
Well, all votes matter in some fashion, one way or another, and how they are used, particularly in a political process. So to that extent, yes. But procedurally, it is going through the process. My quarrel with the process is that it's so fast that we're sprinting on forward on something that, and we've seen this, this is not unique. I mean, it's been that way now for quite a while, probably midway through President Obama's second term or first term. We've seen Congress trying to act as if it was Usain Bolt. And this is a marathon, and it should be a marathon, because problems like those identified can be addressed before the legislation goes into effect, can be considered by the public, and the public has a chance to weigh in and let the legislature know, let Congress know what it thinks of these programs. Instead, we have, this is the way it's going to be, we're going to get it through, and if we have to, we'll fix it later. And that's a terrible way to make sausage.
John, assuming we get a vote on tax reform here in the next few months, will the votes on the buzzer resolution largely be forgotten?
Votes on this budget resolution may be forgotten, but again, there will be votes that, in terms of how this is implemented, and talk about bumper sticker versus long explanation. This is one where the long explanation could really have teeth in terms of the repercussions. When you, as some have alluded, when you look at the changes, for instance, proposed changes in the standard deduction, which could have an impact on charitable giving. That most of the experts say that. So you have, at a time when government funding and public funding of a lot of services is being reduced and more of a burden is being shifted to the philanthropic and the private sector, you don't really want to have impose a new tax code that arguably will reduce that.
Yeah.
And so it's there's a lot of the 401k implications, if in fact those are taxed. Be careful what you wish for, but I think Republicans are desperate to have something they can show of some vote.
Yeah,
that's a promise.
That
you
talked
about
issue.
The promise
that's
they
the
made. They have to fulfill that tax reform promise. Well, Indiana Attorney General Curtis Hill went on Fox News this week to bring his message about the NFL player protests to a national audience. Since the controversy in recent weeks over NFL players taking a knee during the national anthem to protest issues like police brutality and racial disparities, Republican AG Curtis Hill, unlike many in his party, has defended the right of those players to protest. But Hill also says the message of those protests is getting, in his words, muddled.
In terms of protesting the issue of Black Lives Lost, one of the most dramatically difficult things to fathom in this nation is the amount of life lost, Black lives lost, as a result of Black-on-Black violence.
Hill says police shootings of Black people is also an important issue, but stresses the need to bring the problem of Black-on-Black violence, quote, to the forefront. John Katzenberger, General Hill's message diverts from much of the rest of the GOP right now on this issue of the anthem protests. But should his message be the one that the entire GOP should really embrace?
Well, I'll tell you this. I agree that it is a much more nuanced and a more thoughtful take than they should stand because, you know, they're in the workplace and you must respect the national anthem. So, yes, I think to that extent it's got a better chance of resonating in a more rational sense. But he is really still diverting attention away from the original reason for the protests that began in August of 2016 when Colin Kaepernick sacked first yeah, and then took a knee to protest violence against black men from police and also racial injustice. And so, you know, he's bringing a new argument to the table, but it's not the same argument that spurred the protests to begin with.
Coming from Curtis Hill, though, is that an argument that we should be having in a more robust way? The issue of black-on-black violence in addition to police violence.
It certainly is an issue, and I think the Attorney General speaks with a degree of moral authority on the issue. However, for all the reasons that John has articulated, introducing yet another message here connected to the kneeling protest maybe get lost in the confusion. I mean, we already have, is it an anti-Trump protest? Is it about, bullying unions like the Players Union? Is it about free speech? Is it about, I'm not even sure what the protest really was over and what this started out to be or where it has morphed. Now, granted, the issue you described, black-on-black violence, is a significant issue. I'm not sure that alone will be heralded or that cause will be championed by kneeling. It's an issue, but maybe there's another way to shine a light on it.
Is Curtis Hill's take perhaps, though, a better one than a lot of other leaders in his party has taken, which is it shouldn't be about whether or not they're kneeling. We should be talking about why they're kneeling. That should be what we're talking about.
Well, I think, first of all, I think he's handled this really well, and watching the full interview did a nice job, and he raises some important points, and he'd like to see players, you know, speaking out on different issues. But in terms of whether it's kneeling or not kneeling, what this has certainly shown us is that I think that the way in which they've decided to protest has taken all the attention away from whatever it was that they were protesting, whether it was police action or racism or something else. The whole message has been lost because we're talking about how they're doing it. And so pick your topic. I hope that we can find a way to talk about some of these important issues in a much more productive way.
Has the effectiveness of these protests now been lost because the conversation is almost entirely about
I agree with Jennifer on that. I do. I think that I certainly think that although I stand for the national anthem, I understand that they have a right to kneel. They have a right to express their opinion. But it because of the Mike Pence kind of response to this, where they're obviously using it for political purposes, it has taken away from the discussion of the issue. And I think Curtis Hill's response is a little bit better than the traditional Republican response. But I'd also like to see him get up there and talk about meaningful gun control. I mean, part of the reason we have so much violence and so many deaths is because guns are so freely available. And nobody in the Republican Party is talking about that.
If the way in which you're communicating something or trying to make a point is completely undercutting the point that you're trying to make, then you're failing. And that's the problem.
Yeah, that's right. Doubts about President Trump's leadership emerged in a New York Times piece about Vigo County this week, while a new poll suggests support for the president is weakening statewide. The New York Times piece went to Vigo because of its longstanding status as a presidential bellwether. The Western Indiana county has voted for the presidential winner in every election going back more than 100 years, and it overwhelmingly went for Donald Trump last fall. But even some Vigo County residents who voted for Trump in 2016 say they're dissatisfied with his performance. They cited his frequent and potentially divisive use of Twitter and his fights with fellow Republicans, even while those voters say they still support his agenda. And in the latest results of the state's Hoosier survey, an annual poll now in its 10th year, President Trump's support is underwater. 41% approval, 45% disapproval. John Schwannis, that's your name. We talked a couple weeks ago about poll numbers that suggested the president's support here had waned. And based on both the anecdotes, which take of that what you will, and the new survey, should Republicans be a little more concerned?
Yeah, I think the numbers certainly are going down. And you can look at the polls we talked about a few weeks ago that you just alluded to, or we could talk about a poll that came out this week, which was Fox News, which I don't think the White House is accused of being part of the fake news conspiracy to boot him from office. And those numbers showed they've been tracking this since the first poll post-inauguration on at least a monthly basis, I believe, and it shows a pretty significant drop, 10 points overall in terms of approval rating, from the first post-inaugural poll to the one that was released this week on Wednesday, and 4 percentage points in terms of overall approval just in the past month. What I think is particularly telling, and back to your question, should Republicans be unnerved by these numbers, about the biggest erosion of support, if you look at the Fox News poll, was in white evangelicals and in white men who don't have a college degree. Mm-hmm. These are core constituencies, and we hear so much about Donald Trump playing to his base. Well, if his base is starting to diminish, that's pretty unsettling for his backers, it would seem to me.
To that point, though, in the Hoosier survey, it's nearly 80% of Republicans in Indiana, according to that poll, still approve of Donald Trump, still support President Trump. So in that sense, should Republicans be concerned?
Yes, they should be concerned, but it's still incumbent on those who are dissatisfied to vote. 2018 is the poll that really matters. And as long as Democrats and independents have stayed home, then the core constituency, if you will, the power of that constituency is magnified. Unless the opposition to Donald Trump mobilizes and actually votes, it won't matter.
So to the point of, we talked a lot about on this show about Luke Messer and Todd Rokita really tying themselves to Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. And it seems still, even in more negative polls for President Trump, that's probably still a good strategy considering his support among
Republicans. Get the nomination. And it's a fatal strategy to get the election, to win the election. What we're seeing here is that people are realizing he's unbalanced. He's incapable of governing. And you have prominent Republicans like Senator Corker and Senator Flake basically saying it's like an adult daycare center without supervision in the White House. But in Indiana, what have we heard from Todd Young about this? What have we heard from the rest of the delegation here? Anybody expressing concern? Anybody worrying about it? No. Their profiles in cowardice. They don't even want to talk about it because they realize just how detrimental this is going to be to them in November. And there's going to be a lot of buyer's remorse that isn't yet reflected in that poll. But almost every day. It's not every week. I mean, he does something else which is inexplicable. He uses language which is ridiculous.
I want to ask about that point because that was something that struck me in the Vigo County New York Times piece, which is the folks, especially those who voted for him, it's not that they have a problem with his policies. They still support the things that Donald Trump stands for. It's the other stuff, the extracurriculars, if you will. Will some of this be perhaps solved if things like tax reform and other policies that President Trump has promised, if some of those start getting followed through on, if some of those things start happening, do some of these problems get solved?
Yeah, the key factor here is that Hoosiers overwhelmingly support the agenda. They want to repeal Obamacare. They want tax reform. They want to secure our border. They want to grow the economy. They want a business-friendly climate that grows the economy and brings jobs back to America. What they're frustrated with is that we haven't been able to deliver all that yet. They voted overwhelmingly for change, and we haven't been able to deliver it all yet. And that is why, another reason, we need to elect a Republican to the U.S. Senate.
We've had job growth. We have the business-friendly climate, and the result is...
poll after poll and story after story.
Yeah, I got all of
they
that.
They haven't changed their mind about the agenda. It's that we haven't been
you're
able
saying
to get
that
it through. Hold
on,
I
want
to ask this question. I
want to
ask this question. Approval does not equal, because I disapprove of the president's job performance at this moment, doesn't mean I'm not going to vote for President Trump in 2020 or Republicans in 2018. Well, so if you're a Democrat reading this poll, what do you have to do to basically follow through on perhaps an opening you see here?
Well, that's a good point, because you could argue that some of Donald Trump's popularity had to do with Hillary Clinton as much as it, in some sectors of the portions of the country and certainly in some portions of Indiana.
Yeah, she was a woman, so you know, by
broader
definition.
Than that. So you're right, it's not in a vacuum. So, yes, it is. There's a lot of fodder here for Democratic candidates throughout the state to see where there might be weaknesses and vulnerabilities. Beyond Vigo County. Let me just say one thing. Vigo County should enjoy its 15 minutes of fame because, you know, when you're observed, it changes behavior, whatever that principle is. It used to be Owen County until a lot of us used to do 20 years ago stories on Owen County. That was the barometer. And now they went
then
from
we had
now they went
move
from
on,
a hall
we'll
of
move on, we'll move
they
on
went
to
from
something
Hall of
else.
Fame batting average to can even make single.
Well,
play
finally ball. This week, a Greenfield man was arrested for drunk driving after he showed up to the state police post intoxicated for a pre-arranged meeting to collect some of his belongings. Jennifer Hollowell, should this guy win some sort of award for that level of stupidity?
Well, he was awarded with additional charges.
That's true. He was awarded. Boy, that's got to be the easiest arrest of that trooper's career. Well, that's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Jennifer Hollowell, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at wfyi.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.